everyone. I'm Kyle Draper. Welcome to another edition of the Celtics Talk Podcast. I'm coming to you from the Cumberland Farms Lounge at our NBC Sports Boston studios. Cumberland Farms coffee is just 99 cents. Any size, that's 99 good reasons to switch. We got a lot coming to you on this show. We'll hear from Chris Mannix, Scal, and Sherrod as the NBA's trade deadline has come and gone. The Cleveland Cavaliers, the busiest team on trade deadline day. The Celtics, meanwhile, they don't make any moves, but they did make it official, signing Greg Monroe. Let's hear from the Celtics president of basketball operations, Danny Ainge, as he sits down with Scal.
Well, Danny, another trade deadline passed, and you guys stood pat. How was today for you?
It was a long day, like all trade deadlines are. You never know what's going to come out of a trade deadline. So there's excitement and anxiety and all sorts of different emotions that when the day starts. But there were no good deals, so we stayed pat. We like our team and can't wait.
Does this start 2 weeks ago, a month ago?
Yeah, it starts at least a month ago, yeah. A lot of conversation. Mike and Dave and Austin, they've been on the phone a lot over the last few weeks and just trying to set the stage for this time of year, not necessarily today, but going into this past week for the trade deadline.
And why do you think, if conversations do start so late, why do they end so abruptly on today? Like, why don't people do something 2 days ago?
I don't know the answer to that, but a lot of times deals do get done right at the deadline. I thought that there was a chance that some deals might get done at the deadline this year, but they didn't. And, other years they do.
A lot of rumors out there. I don't know if they're true or not. But
probably not.
Marcus Smart's name was thrown around. Is that something that you guys were looking into?
No. No, I mean, listen, there's conversation about all of our players on a roster. Trade season, off season. I mean, that's just part of the business. That's our job. But I never really thought that was going to happen.
Cleveland, obviously an active team. They revamped a ton of their roster. They're definitely a rival for what you guys are trying to go. They've been there so many times. Do you look at what they did and say it changes your ability to make a move, or you want to make a move because of what they did, or is this it's all about the Celtics, not really about what other teams do?
No, it's about us. You don't really pay that much attention. Of course, we know all the deals that are going on around the league, and it'll be interesting to see. Cleveland made wholesale changes today. They cleaned house and they've been a little bit dysfunctional by what I've read, and so maybe they just needed a clean slate and let everybody go about their way and come in with something new. But we have our own challenges that we're trying to overcome, and we're trying to grow as a team, and we have 27 games to prepare us for the playoffs.
So when you see that, do you look at, well, we don't know what this team is? Or when you look at Cleveland and them making wholesale changes, we don't really know what these guys are? Or do you have to evaluate based on the players that they acquired?
Well, you do the best you can at evaluating. I have an opinion. I'm not going to tell you my opinion of what they did. But ultimately, it doesn't matter anyway. It's matter what they do on the court. And we still have to compete. And we'll get a chance to see their team, fresh team this Sunday.
You guys added Greg Monroe. So I guess you can say you announced it today, and he will be in. What does he bring to the team?
Greg is just an inside scoring presence. He's a guy that we've had difficulty matching up with in the past. He's a terrific passer out of the elbows, which we run. Brad runs a lot of his offense with his bigs at the high post. And those are two of his strengths. He's been a good rebounder throughout his career. So Greg's a pro. He hasn't been in a situation like ours, but a team that's on top of the East. And so I think he's very excited, and we're very excited to have him.
I'd like to hear your opinion on this. I have my own, but since I'm interviewing you.
Why don't you share me your opinion, Scal? Since you will anyway.
Well, I'll get your opinion first. We're doing an interview. I think this is the way it's supposed to work, even though I would love to give you my opinion. But the coveted first-round pick that you hear, everyone wants a first-round pick for this guy. Everybody wants a first-round pick for that guy. Why is the first-round pick so coveted, whether it's the late 20s or whatever? What is it about the first-round pick that people want so much?
Well, first of all, most teams, you just have one a year, and you need them to build in a world of salary caps. You need rookie scale contracts. You need first and some second round picks or rookie free agents. But in order to build your team, you look at all the good teams. They all have guys that are late first round picks, middle first round picks. I mean, they're all over the place. Every now and then you get an all-star with a late first round or early second round pick. So even though the odds are that you're not going to get a great player from those positions and you're going to strike out many times, you're also going to have some success over the long haul. And I think that those are just becoming more and more valuable in the world of salary cap basketball.
So even though, I guess the old adage was you're a championship team. They didn't look at their first round picks as important. They would ship them off for a certain player, 3-month rental. And now all of a sudden you're trying to get over that hump. And I know what your guys' philosophy is, but as the rest of the league, is that the same thing for them? What is a 3-month rental when you have 4 years to evaluate a guy on a rookie scale contract?
Well, listen, I've been in professional sports for over 40 years. I mean, we've seen this all the time, first round picks late in the season, mid season, you know, and I would say most of the time they fail. And I think that people are just wising up to that, you know, of getting that rental and that guy that's going to get you over the top and giving up first round picks. Occasionally they've helped, but more times than not, it's not been successful. And I think that people just through history and with their experience, it's becoming harder and harder to pry those first round picks away.
You guys are now entering in the buyout market. I don't even know if you're allowed to. What are you guys allowed to do in the buyout market? Can you add a certain amount of guys? Can you add multiple guys? What do you have? What kind of flexibility do you have?
We can have as many guys as we want as long as they were all minimum salaried players. That's all we have. That's the only exception we have left, which is the case with most teams. But we have a minimum salary to offer players that we may want.
Are you guys aggressively looking and seeing how that transpires?
I wouldn't say aggressively because I don't know who that market is yet. Like the trade deadline is just finished. But I think over the next few days or, you know, next week, we'll have a better idea of who's in that market.
And then is that a recruiting job? Because it's like if you can only offer a minimum, so could everybody else. Is it now just become we're the Boston Celtics. We have this. We're in a position to do that.
Yeah, I mean, last year we had there was a player that wanted to come really bad for us, and we recruited him a little bit, but you know, he chose another team to go play, and you know, it didn't work out very well. And we had PJ Brown in 2008 was a key guy for us, and we had Sam Cassell and Michael Finley and Stephon Marbury. We've had a lot of guys that have come through, and you know, I think that sometimes it's just better. Who was the guard that we had from Miami that was Arroyo?
Oh, Carlos Arroyo.
Yeah, we said Carlos Arroyo. You know, but like as an example.
Yeah, by the way, when you guys did that, I was always having to run through the offense with them. Scal, you're staying after practice to teach these guys the offense. But at least I do every position at that point.
And I mean, Carlos Arroyo was a good player, and not to diminish him at all, but like our coaches were so for it. We got to get it. You know, we need a veteran. And, you know, I'm going like, no, if we have an injury, like Avery Bradley should get every one of those minutes.
Yeah,
and the coach says, no, he's not ready. He's 19 years old and all that. And at the end of the year, every one of the coaches came up and said, yeah, you shouldn't have done Arroyo.
Because, I mean, you still have to look at, well, is it the development of your guys, or you just think, no, we got guys here that are really good? Like Rozier's a great example. Everyone wants, oh, we want this guy. Oh, we want that guy. Rozier gets a chance to start a triple-double and 31. So maybe you just need more
and
minutes.
And a game winner, sort of, the next night.
You exactly. Know? Maybe you just need more minutes for him.
Well, no, listen, I think that there's a lot of truth in what you're saying. And Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum and Rozier and Smart, those guys are all 23 and under. Mm-hmm. And so, like, yeah, these are – I want to see them play. I mean, we have some big decisions in our franchise going forward with those young guys, and we love them all, and they all bring something different to the table, and we have a lot of confidence in them. But, yeah, bringing in other players can jeopardize their growth and development.
All right, let me ask you. If there was a guy that could improve your team for just a year or 3 months – would you pull that trigger? Even if you're like, sacrifice this guy, but this guy could help us for 3 months. Would you do it?
Yes, if I knew that he could do it. You know, not if he was just a name.
Or you're guessing.
You know, yeah, former, you know, used to be an all-star, and now he's not any good, and the team's buying him out.
Yeah.
You know, like, now these guys aren't, they're not buying out any all-stars, just to make sure.
Good point.
And so like you're saying, you know, we got a 23-year-old kid who just had a triple-double in 31 with his first two starts in his NBA career. So I think oftentimes we're not giving those guys enough credit for, like, giving them an opportunity to play. And so it's been – sometimes it's hard because, you know, coaches and fans and, you know, we're all looking for experience. And, you know, listen, I know going into the playoffs this year, we got a 21 and a 19-year-old wing player in the starting lineup. Like, I get that. That's going to – there's been ups and downs all years with those guys. But I really like what they're capable of doing. And we still have 27 more games to get them – in the right place, in the right position, and I'm anxious to see how they play and how they compete.
Now, you've been a coach, so when you look at other players, do you evaluate them differently than now in your position?
Not really. I mean, when I coached for 4 years, but like I liked young players then. I remember my one of my first training camps, we started Sean Marion, you know, ahead of Danny Manning, Cliff Robinson. Just thinking that Sean had this real high potential. I mean, it took him 20 games into his rookie year before everybody knew that he was better. But I think that those are rare. I remember, you know, we drafted Perkins, who wasn't quite ready for NBA primetime as a 18-year-old high school kid. The next time we drafted Al Jefferson, and Doc says, "What are you doing to me? Like, you're killing me." And I said, "You don't ever have to play Al. He's on our Kendrick Perkins program. He's going to be in the weight room, get his body right and everything else." Second day of training camp, Doc comes up to me and says, "He's starting for our team." So I think that, you know, it just every young guy's different.
That's Danny Ainge right there sitting down with Scal as the Celtics pretty much stay quiet on trade deadline day outside of adding Greg Monroe. But like I said, the Cleveland Cavaliers, they were the busiest team on Thursday. They added four new players, including Rodney Hood, also getting Jordan Clarkson and Larry Nance from the Los Angeles Lakers, and George Hill from the Sacramento Kings. They do ship out six players, including Isaiah Thomas, who goes to the Lakers in a trade. Let's check in now with Scal, Sherrod, and Mannix as we discuss a very busy trade deadline day.
Celtics didn't do anything, Scal. You surprised by that?
No, not at all. I you don't want to give up first-round picks for all the people they were asking for. You got Greg Monroe that we talked about it a week ago, but that's a good addition. And you got to have young guys. And do you really need help in the backcourt? All the names out there were guards. Do we really need like a replacement for Terry Rozier for Marcus Smart? I don't think so. I like where we're at right now.
Chris, how active do you think the Celtics were in engaging in these trade talks?
Oh, I think they were extremely active and engaging. But I think from, you know, day one, they drew the line in the sand and said, we're not going to surrender a first-round pick in any deal that brings back a guy that's most likely going to be a rental. I'm talking about Lou Williams before he was re-signed to that extension. And, of course, Tyreke Evans. Look, across the league, people are really surprised that Tyreke Evans is staying with the Memphis Grizzlies. They thought at the end of the day, the Grizzlies would sell off Tyreke Evans to the highest bidder. That didn't happen, but Boston was never going to put a first-round pick in a deal for a guy that might only be on the team for a couple of months.
Chris, I mean, just this time a year ago, we were talking about him being an MVP candidate, and now he's been traded for the second time in 7 months.
Look, Cleveland pulled the trigger on Isaiah Thomas for several reasons. One, of course, the play. He wasn't playing well. But if that was the only thing, I don't think they would have traded Isaiah Thomas. They knew it would take a month, 2 months, maybe longer for Isaiah to fully incorporate himself in. But they saw the lapses that were happening on the floor defensively. And people I talked to familiar with that situation out there, they would tell me that Isaiah's attitude rubbed people inside and around that locker room the wrong way. I mean, he just continued to act like Isaiah Thomas, Boston Celtics star. And he brought up a lot of things. The Kevin Love stuff was an issue. Going at Ty Lue was an issue. I just think at the end of the day, the Cavs just didn't believe that, you know, the juice was worth the squeeze here with Isaiah Thomas.
Well, they shouldn't make it about an attitude thing, because that team was a mess and they've been a mess. And Isaiah comes back and now it's the finger pointed at him. That's just like the age old story. It is always someone else's fault. Before, it was Kevin Love's fault. Then now Kevin Love's hurt. Now it's Isaiah Thomas's fault. Now, I understand why they did it. It is, if you're an owner that's willing to go way into the tax down the road, if you're and you have LeBron James in your team, it is really easy to make those type of moves. And they added some guys that are going to make them better. Guys that play defense, guys that play hard, guys that play with energy, and guys that make shots. So they got better.
And also, Scal, they got guys that, let's say LeBron does walk, will still help them next year.
No.
You don't think Jordan Clarkson will?
That team.
Wait. Do you want to be the Lakers? Do you want to be the Jazz? Like,
if LeBron leaves, they have no choice.
That's an 11. No.
So what are they going to do if LeBron leaves?
You do exactly what you did when LeBron left the first time. You bought him out.
Yes.
Completely bought him out. This is, believe me, if LeBron James leaves, the Cavs are screwed for a couple of years.
No question.
Because you've got Jordan Clarkson under contract for a couple of years. You got $19 million committed to George Hill next year. You are not a playoff team, and you don't have the cap flexibility.
They're not going to be a playoff team no matter what.
So then you want to be bad, Kyle.
You want to
be right in the middle. You're going to be like the, you know, the 10th worst. That's not a terrible place to be.
You don't want to.
It's not that. Here's the thing. That they made the commitment to the money long term. If LeBron leaves, it's suicide. I get it. But here's the thing. You're not going to give up the Brooklyn pick. It's fine. You'll also get bad in the future. So they made these moves, and if LeBron leaves, bad moves.
These moves are made for this year.
Yes,
100%. This is a message sent to LeBron James, too, that we're trying to win for you. We're willing to take on money. We're willing to deal our first-round pick. We're willing to do everything to win for you. This was a message, and look, this is what across the league people are telling me. Message sent to LeBron James and his camp. Look, they created an opportunity for the Lakers to clear cap space, sign him and somebody else, and they did it because they believe that winning is a paramount to LeBron James above all else, and if he winds up leaving, they're screwed.
Now, you might be right about Larry Nance. I think he could be a part of their future, and he's on a rookie scale deal. So you weren't 100% wrong, Kyle.
Of course, I'm never 100%
wrong. 95%
wrong. Scal, what does Monroe bring to the squad?
Well, I mean, he is a low post scorer, and I think he can go a little isolation against smaller guys. I think he's a backup big in this league. I guess the real question is, how many minutes is he going to take from Baines, and defensively, can he do that? I think Baines is one of the most, I don't know, I think he's one of the best defensive centers in the NBA as far as guarding pick and roll. Can Monroe do the same thing? You know, that we'll have to see.
Chris, is he a starter, you think?
No, you keep Baines in that starting lineup. I mean, one of the concerns that they do have internally over there is the impact, as Scal pointed out, on Aaron Baines. Not just the minutes, Scal, but like mentally. You know, you have another big coming in there that you know is going to usurp some of your playing time. How does that affect him? They don't want to lose him because of all he does on the defensive end of the floor. But where I think Monroe can really help is kind of as an offensive anchor with that second unit. He's a low post scorer. I mean, you dump the ball into him enough, he will give you points. So if you can rely on him to be that guy for 5-10 minute stretches, you can maybe play Al Horford and Kyrie Irving together more, not worry about staggering those minutes. You can have someone on that floor.
And one thing to add to that, which is what I want to see, right? Like, I think Brad Stevens is a great coach, but he's never played with a low post big. Yeah. So does he have to change his entire offense? Of every big that's ever had success with the Celtics on offense has been a three-point shooting big. Yeah, I mean, last year, late in the year, they stopped playing Amir Johnson and started going to just Olynyk and Al Horford at the five. So I'm interested to see how it all works out. I'm sure Brad will come up with some stuff.
Chris, let's talk buyout market. Joe Johnson, the big name everyone's talking about. Celtics in play for him, right?
I think they are in play for him. Joe Johnson is still a guy that can help a team win. I mean, he's a terrific isolation player, fourth quarter scorer, no matter where he goes, whether it's been Brooklyn in recent years, Utah even, he was making plays in the fourth quarter. ISO Joe is still a talented guy. And if you can get him, you know, for not giving up anything, I think he could be a big help for this team down the stretch. I think Boston and Golden State are in front-running positions. I think Miami can work its way into that mix. But Joe Johnson is going to be a sought-after commodity in a couple of weeks.
Sherrod, one trade that didn't go down, Tyreek Evans. Seems like Memphis really being stubborn today on the trade market.
Well, they were. You know, they made it clear that they wanted a first-round pick in any deal involving Tyreek, and no one was willing to offer them that. You know, if you remember about a week or so ago, they decided to shut him down, and people assumed that it was because they were just holding out for a deal. Well, a league source told me that Oklahoma City was very interested in pulling the trigger on a deal involving Tyreek, got cold feet at the last minute, and so that's why that was about as close a deal as, from my understanding, they came to coming to getting a deal involving Tyreek. But when you talk about the Boston Boston Celtics and the Memphis Grizzlies. Both of those teams wanted a first-round pick in any deal, and obviously neither got what they wanted.
Yeah, you talk about the Celtics. Marcus Smart, you know, a lot of people thought there was a whole lot of chatter regarding him. What did you hear about Marcus? We heard Danny say earlier, really, he wasn't going to trade Marcus. Are you buying that?
I am buying it up to this from the standpoint that Danny knew what he was asking for. He would be very fortunate. It would have to be a Brooklyn Nets circa 2013 type of deal involving Marcus Smart for Danny Ainge to pull the trigger, and that deal just never came about. You know, I talked to one team that had a conversation with the Celtics, and when the topic came about compensation, i.e. draft picks, once it became clear that the Celtics were not going to get a first rounder, that was the end of conversations. And from what I gather, that was the tone that was set throughout their talks with teams, that if you didn't have a first-round pick that you wanted to include in the deal, there's no point in Danny Ainge entertaining any conversations because a deal was not going to get done without that.
So where do they go with Marcus here? I mean, he's recovering from the hand injury, a restricted free agent this offseason. You've said time and time again he wants $18 million. That's probably not going to happen, Shabrat. So what's the future hold for him?
Well, let me adjust that last statement you said. Let's get rid of the word probably. That is not going to happen. And I think, you know, when you look at the deal that Lou Williams signed, that I think is going to be a barometer for a lot of teams. Marcus will get less than that, but the Celtics have his rights. He's a restricted free agent. I think they want him to go out, get an offer, see if they want to match it or not, and go from there.
So the NBA trade deadline has come and gone, but keep an eye out for the Celtics being active in the buyout market. A number of guys out there, including Joe Johnson, who expects to be bought out by the Sacramento Kings. Here at NBC Sports Boston, we have a number of podcasts in addition to the Celtics Talk podcast. Make sure you check out Quick Slants, the podcast coming at you with Curran, Perry, and Gerard Mayo. They break down the Malcolm Butler situation and Super Bowl 52, plus great insight from Gerard, who's one of Bill Belichick's most trusted players. Subscribe to the Quick Slants podcast on any of our NBC Boston Sports podcast apps or any of your favorite apps as well. And don't forget, this is a big weekend in the city of Boston. Paul Pierce comes back to have his number 34 retired to the rafters. We will have our special Pierce tribute on Sunday. We'll show it to you live as it's happening from the TD Garden. And our next Celtics Talk podcast will be on Monday as we talk about the new look Cavs, Paul Pierce's night, and the Celtics heading into the All-Star break. For everyone here at NBC Sports Boston, I'm Kyle Draper. We'll see you next time on the Celtics Talk podcast.